This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 31 and 32, OWLs and Out of the Fire. And these chapters, Harry gets to take all of his exams.
Good God. Yes.
And the shit hits the fan in the next chapter. In every sense of the world.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. It was like, it was doing that typical Harry Potter thing where it's like kind of a chill thing before everything just kind of pops off. So
yeah.
Not that like the owls were chill, but you know.
Yeah. The calm before the storm.
Yes.
There's a funny meme online about, you know, about Voldemort always waiting until like the end of the school year to like screw things up. So it's like, despite everything, Voldemort really cared about Harry's education.
He does. He does. I mean, good for him. But people have to have their priorities, I guess.
Yes, indeed. So let's get into chapter 31, OWLs. So overall, you just said, I don't know if it was off mic or just now, that you didn't like this chapter that much. Why?
I understand the reason it's here, and I understand why the reason it was included to kind of tell us how intense the OWLs are, because there was kind of extensive, like people are studying, they're stressed out, whatever. And maybe it was just some, you know, trauma from my youth or something coming through thinking about those stressful exam days. But, you know, I guess not a ton happened. I don't, in this chapter, not that I need a bunch of things to happen in every chapter, but I was just kind of like, all right.
Nah, not even the confrontation at the end.
Let me remind myself. I was telling Amy off mic, I've been working kind of like a ridiculous amount. I mean the end. Okay. Sorry.
At the end, something happens.
The end bleeds into the next chapter, which is, yeah, that's kind of where it pops off. But up until that point, it was pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty, I don't know.
Yeah, standard. So we begin with Ron is super uber happy because he was able to scrape a victory for Gryffindor in regards to the Quidditch Cup, and everyone's patting him on the back. He's so proud of himself, and it's like, I'm happy for Ron, and he needs to get a little recognition. And
he needs that confidence boost. Sorry.
He needs a confidence booster. And again, what does it say? He's able to do better when Fred and George are gone.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I do not think that is a coincidence. And even Hermione says it.
Yeah.
Said it earlier.
She did. Yeah. It makes you think of, I mean, I've definitely had people where I'm kind of go into my cancer crab shell around. It sounds like that was what Ron was doing.
Yep. And so Hermione and Harry are not crazy excited to burst Ron's bubble about Grop.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, they kind of have to admit too that they weren't there to see his big win.
Yeah. And what we find out is like, did you see the look on Chang's face when Ginny got the snitch right out from under Harry, under her nose? I suppose she cried, did she? Said Harry bitterly.
Dude, okay, misogynist here, Harry. Like, chill. That I This made me ask two questions, and I don't, if we don't want to spend a lot of time on it, that's fine. But Harry seems like kind of a dick, and Cho is kind of portrayed as kind of whiny. Like,
yeah, that's why, you know, I am, if anything, you know, I am more, I'm typically one to be on Cho's side, thinking that, again, she's just gone through a traumatic experience. She's dealing it in a way that's different than Harry, but it's still completely valid. And I am holding her accountable more so in this rereading about that she, again, what is she? But she's only like 15. She should be able to acknowledge that, you know, it's not fair of me to try and date Harry when I'm still not over Cedric, especially the dynamic that Harry was there when Cedric died and all that crap. So, you know, So Harry is just like, he's over it. And like they portray, from Harry's perspective, they portray Chang as whiny. And it's like, no, she's, it's an unfortunate situation all around.
It's unfortunate. He could have been a little nicer. But
Yep. And so, and then, you know, like you saw her chuck her broom away when she got to back to the ground, didn't you? And they finally have to burst his bubble and be like, we only saw like the first goal. Like, we didn't see any of the match. And Ron is really put out by that, which, you know, I, you know, definitely understand. I remember when I was a teenager, I would ride horses. And the only other person who rides horses in my family is my mom, who is like, has any experience in that. And so I would want her to come with me in and have be this nice mother-daughter thing. And but her job, again, was so crazy because, again, all of the many things I can relate to now, even though university isn't quite as insane bureaucratically as K through 12. But
sure. Yeah.
But yeah. So, you know, obviously she was going through stuff, so she couldn't come with me anymore. And I remember that really like hurt my feelings and like kind of added more fuel to our tension during my like college years, that she was like so absent and she didn't want to be there for those horseback riding milestones. So yeah, Ron is feeling something akin to that.
Yeah, I kind of look at it with you know, there are just things like it, and they do say, like, you know, they were in a hard spot, and I think maybe some of the guilt on their part was the comments prior to them leaving, kind of being like, I mean, Ravenclaw is going to win, so like, who cares? You know, it's almost like they dismissed his attempt. They didn't really give him a chance based on, you know, prior experience too. So I bet there's a little like, ooh, feeling a little guilty there.
Yeah. So, but Ron seems pretty he's pissed off at first, but he seems pretty understanding because, again, he also understands what Hagrid can be like. And so that, so when they tell him, he's just like, he brought one back and hid it in the forest.
Come on, Hagrid, like, get it together.
Yes. And it's like, no, said Ron, as though by saying this, he could make it untrue. No, he can't have. Well, he has. Grob's about 16 feet tall, enjoys ripping up 20-foot pine trees, and knows me, she snorted, as Hermie.
Old Hermie.
And Hagrid wants us to teach him English. Yeah. Which, again, I take offense to people thinking that just because you're a native speaker of English that you can teach English. Like that. Yeah. You know, just because, you know, a lot of like study abroad opportunities, like people, expats living, a lot of times the only, like, for a while, at least in the beginning, the only like job opportunities available to them are teaching English. And you know, some people, you know, can, you know, ease into it and do it well. Because, again, there's a whole bunch of, like, pedagogy. And, like, just because I'm a native speaker of English doesn't mean I, like, technically there is an order of adjectives, like, by specific, like, color or size or whatever that we native speakers, like, don't even think about because we just spout it out, however many adjectives. We just know what adjectives sound better in front or before, whatever. But people actually have to learn that.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so anyway, so not only just even going to visit Hagrid, Grob completely unrealistic, but also teaching him English, totally unrealistic.
Yeah, Grob, this whole thing is very, very, I don't know, man. Hagrid and some of his choices are a little questionable.
And it's like, we promised. Well, you're just going to have to break your promise, that's all, said Ron firmly. I mean, come on, you know, remember Norbert, remember Aragog? Have we ever come off better from mixing with any of Hagrid's monster mates?
He's got a point.
Yeah. And again,
I think they did survive, though. They survived, all of them.
So this is the bar, survival.
I mean, with Hagrid, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's just...
We discussed it at length in the Grob chapter of, again, the only way I can even begin to somewhat excuse Hagrid's questionable decisions in regards to, you know, treating the trio as adults rather than kids is that he's so used to interacting in the world when he is so tough and can handle certain like level of physicality and brutality, and he's not thinking, oh, they can't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He forgets his you know, strength. He
forgets his privilege.
Yes. His giant privilege.
Which, again, that just like put a shiver down my spine because, again, being half giant is not a privilege in this world, you know.
Right.
Sociologically, sociopolitically, socioeconomically, but in terms of, yeah, pure physicality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we find out. At the end of this chapter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
So, and Ron is trying to be, like, in denial, to be like, okay, you know, maybe he can hang on until the end of term and we won't have to go near Grob at all.
Yeah. Yeah, right, Ron. Like, have you learned nothing?
Yes. It's like, you know, it made me think of you know nothing, Jon Snow.
Yeah. You know nothing, Ron Weasley.
Yeah. So, OWLs. They're spread out over 2 weeks. And
Jesus.
Yeah. Everyone's like starting to, you know, teachers are starting to review. And one note here is like, you know, Snape's still ignoring him. And it's like, if Lupin said anything, Snape is ignoring Lupin just as much as he's ignoring Harry. So clearly nothing has changed, you know.
No, nothing has changed. And
which, if that's the case, it makes you wonder, like, what exactly Dumbledore is up to for Dumbledore not to some way contact Snape and just be like, get in there and teach him occlumency.
Right, yeah. So there's, the Dumbledore mystery has only just gotten more, I mean, you know, I have no idea where he is. I don't know where he is, but you're exactly right. Like, where is he telling Snape, like, just suck it up and teach him occlumency.
Yeah. Suck it up, man.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, Snape.
Which is, I feel like we were both dealing with a variety of instances of, you know, dealing with incompetent men in a variety of capacities. And I feel like, you know, not that I am stupid enough to say it, but in terms of me thinking, I usually am thinking the term suck it up, man, in reference to men and not women.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I women put up with a lot more shit than men do, and I don't know. I'll save my feminist rant for another day.
Yeah. So yeah, people are starting to get really antsy. Ernie is studying 10 hours a day on a weekend.
Don't do that.
Yeah, Draco's anxiety is manifesting itself in his like name dropping, but even Neville can call that out, and because we don't think about it this way, but Neville is a pureblood. And so, like, you know, he's from that sort of family, even though they're not, like, you know, crazy, like, you know, pureblood maniacs. But they are they're an old pureblood family. And he's like, Griselda is one of my grandma's friends. And she's never mentioned the Malfoys.
Interesting.
Yeah. And this is so sad. Like, is she nice? Bit like Gran, really. I don't think they will make any difference. Gran's always telling Professor Marchbanks, I'm not as good as my dad. That's so horrible.
Yeah, jeez, people. You know, oh my God.
So now that you know, like, the full capacity of, you know, Neville's history, you know, I don't think, obviously, his grandmother is an evil woman, but I think it's the only way I can justify it, because some of this treatment is, like, really mean, like, really.
Yeah.
You know, not a Cinderella type of abusive the way Harry's is, but, you know, a sort of negligent abuse. I think for, you know, to for his grandma to lose her son in such a way. I think she was hoping, like, okay, I have my grandchild. I can raise him exactly like my son, and he'll be just like my son. And then realize, but of course, Neville is a different person with different right. strengths and different attributes, and her not being able to adjust with that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Ugh, poor Neville, man. He really gets a raw deal, but in these books. So hopefully we see his redemption at some point.
Yeah.
I think we might.
Yeah. So, and then I guess I was really tickled by a flourishing black market trade in AIDS. So this, what is it that people would, like, you know, people had prescriptions of, like, certain pills, and, like, they would, like, sell them, like, to others because they just wanted, like, boost of, you know, various types of stimulants. And, like, I don't know, I'm a goody two shoes. Like, I never even was in a circle of people where that it was even an option. Like, hey, do you want this, Amy? And I'm just, you know, I'm just sitting at home studying.
Right, right. Yeah, I never Adderall.
Did you ever have any?
No, I mean, I take plenty of medication to just deal with life as an adult. So that's where my medication came in. But no, I, you know, in the relationship with school, I really appreciate how kind of concerned these students are about exams and things like that. I feel like there was kind of a, you know, you had a group of kids that was like, oh, I don't care about school. And then you had a group of kids that, you know, studied and whatever. I never medically enhanced any of my mm-hmm. studying. So,
yeah, you know. It's interesting. Like, they, all of them seem to understand, like, the heavy implications of these exams in a way that, like really when I was in high school, like, even with my, like, very limited capacity as a teenage brain, I understood that, you know, getting good grades to facilitate getting into a good college is, at least according to the societal myth, that education, you know, solves everything, which
yeah.
we can have a whole other podcast about my disillusionment with that. But anyway, you know, I understood, you know, that even though I was so young, that, you know, stakes could be high, you know, and to take things seriously. And I did not understand how other kids did not realize this. And my dad's favorite quote was that if lifelong poverty doesn't motivate them, then nothing will.
That's so interesting, because I've had this conversation with my husband many times, and then, I mean, it's applicable. He grew up in a family that this was, like, getting good grades and doing well in school was, like, the end-all be-all importance, because his parents kind of reiterated, like, what your dad said. Like, you get good grades, you get a good job, you know, make money, and you live a decent life.
You live a decent life and are a contributing member to society.
Exactly. I feel like that we're, and you touched on this, the animosity is when you do those things and you're not, you know, you're continued to be like our generation, I personally think, just kind of hovering in the middle class and never kind of breaking through. Like, we were told we were going to be able to if we did these things. So my parents were a little bit the opposite. They wanted us to do well, but it wasn't as emphasized as heavily as some other things. So it was interesting. And I always think it's interesting that I've kind of gravitated toward, you know, friends that are, you know, like you and like Mike.
Yeah, like in terms of that sort of, like, academic pressure, like, my upbringing was very reminiscent of what probably Asian families and Asian kids go through.
Well, I mean, you have several master's degrees and you're a very smart person, so it paid off. So,
you know, it was okay. Like, the general, like, academic, you know, emphasis, like, that was okay. What I didn't like was my, you know, I had to rebel. Like, my parents could think the only possible academia that's, you know, education that's worthwhile is engineering or math and science, and it's like, no, I'm doing linguistics,
right?
You know, so if their approach to education was just a little more broad and more open mind, not so narrow, then it would have been fine. But, like, in terms of just purely being very academic heavy. But anyway, I digress. So, all these stimulants are showing up, people buying them, and Hermione has to confiscate them. And it's like, we wanted to buy that. Don't be stupid. You might as well take Harold Diggle's powdered dragon claw. And so dragon claw does work. And, you know, Hermione has to be like, I've had a look at this, and it's actually dry doxy droppings.
Ew. I think that's what people would do with different medicine too, right? It was like crushed up Advil or something. So
yeah, like, you know, who, again, like when it's, yeah, again, I'm just so ignorant. I know nothing of like drug cartels or like how to get drugs. And I'm just thinking, I don't know what the hell this shit came from. I can't put it in my body. Like what the?
That's why legal weed is the best weed, because you know exactly where it came from. That's my main argument. At least you know it's not like some laced with anything. So
yeah.
Anyway, but that's a whole other argument too. If you want to talk about drugs, is people saying, well, you know, give people clean drugs or untainted, uncut drugs. I don't know. I'm not like super into drugs, so
yeah, yeah. And that's the same argument they give towards. Which I have sometimes in the past adhered to, like allowing prostitution, because it's like I'd rather have people, but men, because I'm
right.
a heterosexual cisgender woman. I would prefer that, in a utopian world, that I'd rather like to have prostitution available so that the people who wanted that were not polluting the dating pool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that seemed, but then I'm not with all that, because it's like, even if it was legal, there would be people that are too proud or too poor to hire sex workers, and they would be polluting the dating pool anyway. So I'm just like,
yeah.
Like, and I, it sounds okay, but it's like, no, that's not how it would be. People would still be jerks.
Yeah. I mean, it's sex work is such a danger. Well, it's, I don't know. I'm fascinated by that. I could talk about that for hours, and I understand the reason for legalizing and the reason for not. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So anyway, so realizing that, you know, took the edge off Harry and Ron's desire for brain stimulants, and
caffeine's a brain stimulant. Anyway, let's keep going.
Yeah, there's a. Did you ever watch As Told by Ginger?
No. Huh?
Well, there's one episode where it's definitely an allegory to like drugs, where she just started high school, and like the workload is so intense compared to middle school. And so she starts drinking coffee and, you know, getting really, you know, wired to like study and basically, you know, going absolutely insane.
Right. Oh, coffee drunk is a weird feeling. I couldn't live without caffeine.
Yeah. So anyway. So, yep. So their results will be sent to them in July, and you know, their first exam was charms, and it was Monday. And so yeah, they just go through the whole thing, and because they have the theories, like the written exams in the morning, and then the practicals in the afternoon. And so Harry, for his charms, gets Professor was his name Tofty.
Yeah, it's kind of a funky name, Tofty.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just so funny because, you know, he's like, is it the Harry Potter? And when Draco hears that, he gets all flustered and frustrated. Like, Draco is so jealous of Harry's. It's just interesting in terms of, like, how does Draco internalize and be jealous of Harry's fame? Because he has a lot of, again, even though Harry has no control over what made him famous, it is something specifically, like, even though the Potters were a pure blood family and, you know, they did have money, probably not to the same skill as the Malfoys, but, you know, Draco cannot deal with the fact. I think it speaks to his inadequacies that he knows he's reliant on a family name and not specifically himself for his,
yeah,
for his, like, social capital.
Or he's in love with Harry.
Or that could be true. As well, according to probably a good fraction of the 800,000 fan fictions.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I know that fan fiction's been written many times.
And so, yep. So he does pretty okay in charms. And then, you know, they just go through all of them. There's Transfiguration. There's, you know, Divination goes horribly. I love with Transfiguration, like Ron just, he doesn't know how it happened, but he turned a dinner plate into a mushroom.
Yeah, good on Ron. You know, sometimes.
Like, that reminds me of when I'm like trying to quote unquote fix something with my computer and then it magically fixed and I'm like, I don't know what I did.
I was thinking of like math, like I'm horrible at math and it's just like, oh, I get the answer somehow and we're like, I don't know. So that's trauma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, strong.
And Hermione is on edge a lot. And, you know, I had someone like this where we were studying for the AP World History exam. And I was just trying to like ask her questions. She's like, that won't be on the exam. And I'm thinking like, how do you fucking know?
Yeah.
And so I had to get up and like walk away, like, because she was just being so insufferable.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the guy had Herbology, and for Defense Against the Dark Arts, that's the one that Harry feels the most confident about. And Tofty is like, I heard you can do a Patronus for a bonus point.
And he does it. What does he think of? He
looks directly at Umbridge and imagined her being sacked.
Yeah, well, hey.
It says a lot about his depth of hatred for this woman if that sort of schadenfreude can produce a Patronus.
Right, yeah, for sure. That's, well, good for him. He got his point.
Yep. And Hermione's a little testy. She doesn't think she did that great on ancient runes.
I can understand why. That's hard. When you were reading runes for a while, I was like, man.
Yeah, she's like, I mistranslated Efwas. And for the first time, it's like, I know what that is.
There you go.
Yep. So, yep. And then she mentions, like, Umbridge is really angry right now. Someone put another Niffler, and and Harry's just like, good. It's not good, said Hermione.
Yeah.
Umbridge thinks Hagrid's doing it, and he's like, he's teaching right now. How the hell can he do it? And Hermione's like, oh, you're so naive sometimes, Harry. You really think Umbridge will wait for proof?
Yeah, if we've learned anything, this person is very illogical.
Yeah. And then, you know, she's sort of like, you know, storms away to the dormitories, and Ron's just like, such a lovely, sweet-tempered girl.
God, Ron bringing the sass.
Mm-hmm. And then, they had potions, which wasn't horrible because Snape wasn't there, Harry and Neville can perform decently.
Yeah, yeah, amazing how that works, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And then Hermione's got arithmancy, and then divination just truly sucks. And again, I agree, they should have just dropped it when they wanted to. I think the only reason they didn't drop it is they needed a certain amount of electives and they just wanted to coast rather than maybe take something that was maybe interesting but required work.
That makes sense. I was an art student. I know those people. Like, oh, art's easy.
Yeah. It's like those kids in choir.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, because they didn't want to be in like doing something like with the computers, like tech stuff.
Right.
So anyway, so finally we get to the astronomy exam, which of course, for obvious reasons, is not in the afternoon. It takes place at night. So right. They're all up there in the astronomy tower labeling their little planets and their little moons.
Good for them.
When the doors open and these shadowy figures are walking across the lawn to Hagrid's hut.
Yeah.
What did you think of this?
This is like, it was, first of all, what the hell are these people thinking? You've got a bunch of kids taking exams and we're going to do this big dramatic like arrest of these two very popular teachers during an exam. Like, so obviously education is on the on the top of these people's minds. No, it's the ministry politics. That's what they're caring about.
Or even just like Umbridge. Was Umbridge so desperate to get rid of Hagrid, like, quickly that, like, she couldn't even, like, look at the chart and be like, oh, the one exam that isn't in the afternoon, that's at night, I'm gonna do my stakeout then.
So then it was, like, intentional. So she's, like, she's wanting to prove a point or something. I don't know, man. This bitch, as we always say, this bitch.
Yep. So Harry's, like, looking, and so they're, like, there's a dozen, you know, basically henchmen with Umbridge, and they go into Hagrid's cabin and we get a bunch of screaming, and basically Hagrid's like, you'll never take me alive.
Yeah, he puts up a fight.
And he basically, you know, they're firing stunners, but they're like ricocheting off him.
Yeah, here's where we talked about his physical presence being an advantage, but not so much luck for Professor McGonagall.
So, you know, it's just, and Harry is shocked because, you know, Hagrid has always been portrayed as, of course, this gentle, you know, giant because, and again, as with a lot of dogs and my experience with a lot of horses, the bigger animals tend to be more chill because it's like, I know I can squish you. So I don't have to prove anything. I don't have a Napoleon complex. And so very rarely do they need to, you know, resort to using their physicality in such a way.
Right. Like Great Danes are supposedly not that. I mean, you know, you can make any dog horrible. You can make any animal horrible, but they just look scary. They're just
So this is the very first time that Harry has seen like Hagrid in a temper, like whooping people's asses.
It's kind of like you see somebody and you're like, oh, I don't want to piss that guy off. I used to work at a record store and worked with a bunch of guys like that. And I saw one of them pissed off and it was like, yeah, you don't want to piss that person off. So Hagrid proves that point.
You know, I remember just, I forget, there are so many like baking competitions and stuff. Is like, I guess maybe cupcake wars, but specifically about cupcakes. And more often than you would think, there would be these guys that were super buff with all these tattoos, look so badass, but they're like, oh, I'm baking, you know, this is my cupcake business. And I'm just like, I want to know how many people, idiots, those guys threw down at the bar for mocking their cupcakes.
Right. There you go. I love guys like that.
Yeah. So Hagrid is clearly, obviously resisting arrest.
Yes, definitely.
And knocking out ministry officials. And McGonagall comes out and is trying to like come to Hagrid's aid. And they immediately just turn on her 4 stunner spells at once in her direction. And she's just completely knocked cold.
Yeah.
Like first she's glowing like red for a little bit and then collapses.
Like, very upsetting. Poor McGonagall.
Yeah, and this is what, the examiner's trying to ignore everything's happening. But when that happens, like, not even Professor Tofty can, like, you know, pretend that this is the normal exam.
Yeah.
And Hagrid took 2 massive swipes at his closest attackers. Judging by their immediate collapse, they'd been knocked cold.
Yeah.
It's like, what if Hagrid killed some of them? Like,
yeah, that's something that I did consider. Like, what if he actually took one out and took a person out?
Yeah, get him, scream Umbridge. But her remaining helpers seemed highly reluctant to go within reach of Hagrid's fist. And so Hagrid takes up Fang's poor, unconscious body and disappears past the gate and into the night.
Very disruptive to the exam. Like, just let's just talk about that alone. Very disruptive. But
yeah. And so there, of course, so that's all everyone's talking about. And it's like, you know, how come all those spells bounced off him? It'll be his giant blood, said Hermione shakily. It's very hard to stun a giant, and they're like trolls, really tough. But poor McGonagall, 4 stunners straight in the chest, and she's not exactly young, is she?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ernie theorizes that she didn't want a scene like Trelawney and so just wanted to do this in the middle of the night.
She needs to pay better attention to her exam schedule then.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's, if anything, it's like, yes, she wanted the majority of people not to see it, but she wanted Harry and his gang. Yeah. Like, oh, that's when he'll be doing astronomy. I want him to see me take his giant friend away in handcuffs.
Right, because everybody kind of knows the affection that Harry feels for Hagrid. I mean, rightfully so. He's the one that brought him into that world.
Yep, so, and it's like, but why sack Hagrid now, asked Angelina. It's not like Trelawney. He's been teaching much better than usual this year. And I'm like, oh, that's like kind of left-handed. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Not that it isn't true, but.
Right. Oh, man.
Yeah, but Umbridge hates part humans, said Hermione bitterly. Yeah, she was always going to try and get rid of Hagrid. And she thought Hagrid was putting Nifflers in her office. And Lee Jordan's like, oh, crap, that was me.
Yeah, I know. Oh, gosh, that's got to feel pretty bad. That was pretty funny, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, why would Hagrid do that? That's kind of a funny assumption, but whatever.
Well, the only assumption she has is that it's a creature and he's the very stupid.
Very thin.
Very thin tie. Very superficial, but anyway. And so, yeah, so that Harry only gets 3 hours of sleep, obviously, because all this, because they were up till 4 a.m, you know, talking about this. I know that struggle, buddy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was so angry with Umbridge, he could not think of a punishment bad enough for her, though Ron's suggestion of having her fed to a box of Starving Blast and Nitzcroots had its merits.
I mean, they're pissed. I guess that's, I mean, and when you see somebody you love get hurt, that usually does it.
Mm-hmm. And then their final exam is History of Magic.
Which we all know how thrilling they find that. So.
Which, again, I think we discussed with Morgan way back in the final chapters of book one. That, again, for as much as people are crazy about the crazy things of Game of Thrones, like, there's lots of things in history that, you know, are even creepier or more scandalous or gorier. Just go pick up a history book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So things start blurring. Harry's like going in and out of consciousness and he gets it, this dream. What do you think of this dream?
I think for a chapter dealing all with exams, all of a sudden it's like, what the hell's going on here? And when he talked about the, he was talking about the shape of the Harry saw a long fingered white hand clutching a wand. Rise on his own arm. Anyway, I knew this was going to be serious. And I mean, Voldemort, obviously it's Voldemort, but I just, and then Harry goes full panic when, you know, he puts that together.
Yeah. So Voldemort saying, take it for me, lift it down. I cannot touch it, but you can.
What the hell
is
that?
And it's like, you'll have to kill me. Undoubtedly I shall in the end, but you will fetch it for me first, Black. You think you have felt pain thus far? Think again. We have hours ahead of us and nobody to hear you scream.
Good Lord, Voldemort. He needs to go hang out with Filch or whatever.
Yeah, indeed. And thus ends chapter 31 with that terrifying dream, which I just had a terrifying dream a few days ago. I had a dream where I was like studying or working in Finland and the Russians invaded.
That is awful. That is a very scary
thing. And I was like terrified. And it's like, yeah, because Finland is also terrified of that.
Oh, man. I need to keep up with current events.
Yeah. Like, again, it's like Russia is so, again, Putin is just so like stupid not to foresee this. It's like the whole thing of getting, you know, invading Ukraine is because he didn't like NATO's influence, but all he's done is be like, this is why everyone wants to be part of, join the NATO club.
Yeah, right. Like,
yeah, so anyway. Yeah. Chapter 32, Out of the Fire.
Out of the Fire.
Out of the Fire. So you said you liked this one better.
Just, you know, more interesting things happen, obviously. I think I liked the action of, you know, we ended chapter 31 on Harry going, Sirius is in trouble. He's with Voldemort. And this was just, this chapter is basically him trying to get to Sirius. And, you know, and the bumps along the way. And one giant bump.
Yeah. So.
Dolores Umbridge.
Oh, yeah. So he leaves the Great Hall, the examination. He first goes to the hospital wing and is just like bursting the doors like dramatically. And Madame Pomfrey is like, what the hell? And he's like, I need Professor McGonagall. And she's like, she's not here. She's been transferred to St. Mungo's.
Yeah.
And you know, 4 stunning spells straight to her chest at her age. It's a wonder they didn't kill her, you know? And I don't, you know, she's gone. You know, Madame Pomfrey is misinterpreting his, like, stunned silence. And it's like, you know, I don't wonder you're shocked, Potter, said Madame Pomfrey with a kind of fierce approval in her face, as if one of them could have stunned Minerva McGonagall face on by daylight cowardice. That's what it is. Despicable cowardice. If I wasn't worried what would happen to your students without me, I'd resign in protest. And I think that's an interesting point that, you know, a lot of people, you know, whether in like a medical profession or like other positions of power where it's like, what are the ethics of, you don't want to like continue working because you realize there's so much corruption and there's all so many things you can't fix. But if you leave, who is going to mitigate the quote unquote mad king?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's always a hard spot so
that's
to be
always
in.
That's a hard position to be in. And I sympathize. And for a while, I think there was a good portion of like cognitive dissonance where people were so desperate for things not to be that bad with Trump that they were trying to view Ivanka and like her husband as the sort of, you know, normal people that could exert some influence. And it's like, no,
it's, I think you always kind of hope there's somebody that's like a secret liberal, you know, in those situations. Look at Jared Kushner's brother, who's pretty awesome. He is very much a liberal, but, yeah, you're exactly right. People were like, oh, if Ivanka said this like thing, it was a hat. And it's like, no, it's not. She's horrible. Sorry to all you Ivanka supporters. I don't care.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's always an interesting, you know, and a conflicting place to be. Because it's like you want to resign based on principle. But it's like, but if I'm not here, then nothing is, certainly nothing will change at all. Right. So, yeah, it's hard.
It is hard. It is hard.
So... So Harry's running and it's like, you know, this, he's like, oh crap, there's no Dumbledore, there's no Hagrid, there's no McGonagall, there is nobody.
There's no ally for him.
There's no ally. Well, there is, but he doesn't think of it because he's a dickhead.
There's like a secret, a very secret ally and who is begrudgingly an ally.
Yeah, like I do not blame Harry at all for in this sort of panic not going to Snape, because Snape has done nothing to, again, not that he needs to be, again, just neutral, like not be nice to Harry, just not be a dick.
Yeah, and especially after that whole experience with the Pensieve and who's in trouble, I mean, you know, he's probably feels a little strange about it.
Yeah, so anyway, so he tells Ron and Hermione what's happened. And it's like, how are we going to get there? And like, get there? Get to the Department of Mysteries so we can rescue Sirius. And Hermione, what do you think of what Hermione is saying?
She, you know, I am glad that Ron kind of stands up for Harry in this instant, because I think for so long they would, sure, they fuss at Hermione, but they usually kind of just kind of follow her lead. And this time, you know, Ron is like, what does she say? You've never been there. You've dreamed about the place, but that's all. And Harry's like, but they're not normal dreams. And, you know, he kind of continues on about Ron's dad. And Ron's like, he's got a point. So it's kind of like, Hermione, you know, take a minute and think about what is he's really saying here. So
yeah, and she's bringing up interesting, good points of how could the two most wanted wizards be in the Ministry of Magic right now. And, you know, and it's, and again, but she, again, Hermione has always been, and I don't think I'm spoiling anything, she will continue to harp on Harry's ass for not trying that hard with occlumency. So she always comes at it with the position of, you shouldn't have seen this at all, therefore we should not be reacting to, you know, what you've seen. And again, it's, you know, but also like, not that she doesn't bring up good points, but she should, the only way she could have done this better would be like, I don't doubt what you saw, Harry, but what if this is a trap because Voldemort knows what you're like? Like, not directly, like, you know, she's coming at it in a way that Harry is taking it as, you don't believe what I saw with my own eyes, when there's already a precedent that these things are true.
Right. And I'm glad, you know, she brings out that he's like, he says, you do have a bit of a saving people thing. So to your point, she's in, you know, very astute of her to be like, look, you always go and rescue these people. So why wouldn't Voldemort like take somebody that's really important and trick you into something? But he kind of is just like, I don't care. Like, he's just like, I need to figure this out.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, if you, you know, if the bad guy's got someone you loved, it's like, save that person and we'll think about the other stuff later.
Exactly. I mean, it happens in movies all the time, too.
So the compromise is, which again, the acting the hero thing, I think it's a bit unfair for both Hermione now and even Ron when he was, you know, taking the Mickey out of, as the prince would say, taking the Mickey out of Harry when that happened in, like, saving Fleur's sister at the lake, last year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they'd be like, oh, you're such a prat. And again, the saving the hero. And it's like, Harry lived, you know, grew up in an abusive situation, and he's been in situations where clearly adults could not protect him.
Right, yeah.
So, like, there's no, he's always been forced into positions where I have to handle shit on my own.
Right,
both from a deeper, like, again, psychological sense of how he grew up, and then also these situations he's constantly been forced into. So the fact that it seems that people, you know, like Ron and Hermione hold that against him.
Right. Yeah, they probably just aren't, you know, they're not thinking it through.
No, they're not thinking it through, and especially they should be thinking it through because, you know, Harry's about to lose his shit.
Right. Yeah, here we go with caps lock Harry again, yeah, all of a sudden.
Yeah, this is not the time to be testing this out. Anyway, right. So the compromise they come with, well, first of all, Ginny shows up and it's like, what? Hey, we recognize Harry's voice. What are you yelling about? Never you mind, said Harry roughly. So, and it's, again, very paternalistic with Ginny.
Yeah.
He likes
people. Yeah.
Which it's like, you know, the only people he kind of sort of trusts to handle this sort of situation is, you know, Ron and Hermione. Like no one else.
Ginny handles him pretty well. I think in both situations that we've seen thus far, she's kind of like, all right, like she's kind of the calm force in this. She doesn't, I don't know. I think I like how her character is building.
Mm-hmm. And so the compromise that they come to, which I think is pretty smart, you know.
Yeah.
That, you know, Hermione's like, we need to check Grimmauld Place and see that Sirius is there. If he's not there, I swear I won't stop you. I'll go with you.
Yeah, right. Right.
And so they decide that Ginny and Luna are going to create a diversion.
Right, right.
And so they do that. Like, I don't remember exactly how they do it. And
then, is it the garroting gas, which is like...
Yeah, so goes into Umbridge's office, you know, gets the flu powder, and he puts his head in the fire, and it's obviously the kitchen, and no one is there. And he's, like, calling for people, but who shuffles in?
Freaking creature.
How did you think of Creature's demeanor?
I mean, he's being a smug asshole, kind of. He's, like, not giving any information. He's just kind of relishing his moment of power, I think.
Yeah, and so Harry's like, where's Sirius, Creature? Master has gone out, Harry Potter. Where's he gone, Creature? Creature merely cackled. You know, what about Lupin, Mad-Eye, any of them? Are any of them here? Nobody here but Creature, said the elf gleefully. And turning away from Harry, he began to walk slowly. Creature thinks he will have a little chat with his mistress now. Yes, he hasn't had a chance in a long time. Creature's master has been keeping him away from her. Where has Sirius gone? Creature, has he gone to the Department of Mysteries? Creature stopped in his tracks. He could just make out the back of his bald head through the forest of chair legs before him. Master does not tell poor Creature where he is going, said the elf quietly. But you know, shouted Harry, don't you? You know where he is. Master will not come back from the Department of Mysteries, he said gleefully.
Dun dun dun. Yeah.
So we have it confirmed Sirius is not there.
Right, right.
Then.
Yes.
Harry can barely process that when Umbridge drags him by his hair out of the fire, and we see Umbridge completely unhinged. How is this scene for you?
This was like, they describe it as she is holding his hair, bending his neck back to the point like it's like she's going to slit his throat. So like, she's, you know, off the rails. She doesn't have anybody, no ally that we're aware of. If anything, she thinks Snape is her ally, mm-hmm. is there for Harry at this point. So she's kind of like, okay, cool. I can do whatever I want. And really freaks them the hell out.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see her totally unhinged like this, because I think as we discussed with Amanda, Umbridge is the reason she's so hated and she's so realistic is because she is that more political villain. And so we don't expect her to be this sort of batshit crazy the way we expect Voldemort to be.
Right, right. She's very...
we expect her type of villainy to be more not subdued, subtle.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Up until this point, a more subtle kind of, like, I'm just following the rules kind of villain. Yeah. Now she's like...
What was that term? Was that term beating people with the book?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember. But yeah. I was trying to think about it the other day because I was, like, thinking about it and I couldn't think of it. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... It's like, I was trying to get my fireboard. Liar. Your fireboard is under strict guard in the dungeons, as you very well know. So her and her inquisitorial squad have apprehended Ron, Ginny, Luna, and Neville, because Neville was trying to protect Ginny.
Friggin' poor Neville.
Yeah. And so, again, well, first of all, it was doomed to fail because Ron apparently came up with a... excuse to distract her, which she immediately knew wasn't true because she knew Peeves was, you know, doing something else.
Right.
Which, again, not a good thing. Like, don't rely on, like, Peeves to be, because Peeves is going to be somewhere.
Yeah, and he's kind of failed him twice at this point. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's none of your business who I talk to, he snarled.
So, something that you have alluded to, and... came to fruition, and I was like, Amy has read these books before. Like,
no. Shocker.
Yeah.
What was it?
This is Umbridge's opportunity to use Veritaserum on Harry, she thinks, after mm-hmm. all this chaos.
Yes. And so to that end, she brings Snape in. And Snape is like, I want another bottle of Veritaserum. And Snape's just like, you used all my shit. I need a month to make more, which is probably a lie, but.
Okay. I was going to say, this is bullshit, right? Because because he's playing his role, like he's still being a dick, but I also like how he kind of embarrasses her. Like he says, what does he say? You took my last bottle to intake. Surely you did not use it all. I told you that three drops would be sufficient. And Umbridge flushed. And I thought that's a big moment for that character because mm-hmm. she's pretty, like, she's above everybody. But Snape, she was like, oh. So good for Snape. One time I'm going to say that. The first time I've said that. Good on him.
The first time in how many episodes? How many books?
Yeah, I know. God. Here's his moment from me.
Yeah. It takes a full moon cycle to mature. So, well, I guess I'm just curious how he's bullshitting of – Is he bullshitting that he legit doesn't have any, or is he bullshitting that it actually takes a whole month to make more?
I was going to ask you, but all right.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly what Veritaserum brewing that entails. So, you know, I wish to interrogate him. I wish you provide me with a potion that will force him to tell me the truth. I've already told you, said Snape smoothly again. Like dealing with a toddler, you know, just be like, I can't give you what you want because right. of XYZ. And she's like, you are on probation. You are being deliberately unhelpful.
All right.
Yeah. And Snape looked back at her, his eyebrows slightly raised. And he's just like, I do not give a shit.
Yeah.
About yeah. any of this.
Yeah. I think Snape's going to be fine. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So Snape goes to leave and Harry's realizing this is the only potential ally. And so... the only way he can convey it, he's just like, he's got Padfoot, because obviously Snape's going to know
right.
Sirius's old nickname. He's got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden. Snape had stopped with his hand on Umbridge's door handle. Like, what is Padfoot? What is hidden? What does he mean, Snape? Snape looked around at Harry. His face was inscrutable. Harry could not tell whether he had understood or not, but he did not dare speak more plainly in front of Umbridge. I have no idea, said Snape coldly. Potter, when I want nonsense shouted at me, I shall give you a babbling beverage. And Crab, loosen your hold on. If Longbottom suffocates, it will mean a lot of tedious paperwork, and I'm afraid I shall have to mention it on your reference if ever you apply for a job.
I gotta have, again, some respect for Snape's level of, like, deception here. So, mm-hmm. unlike Umbridge, he's always been an asshole. So he can continue to be an asshole. He's not, he didn't come in here and being real sweet to anybody. He's like, he has that on her. Good for him.
Yeah. So in light of this, Umbridge is like, very well. I'm left with no alternative. This is more than a matter of school discipline. This is an issue of ministry security. Yes, yes. So she is fully prepared to use the Cruciatus curse on Harry.
There is no, I mean, and these are, it's not like you get a pass if you're in the ministry, right? If you're in the ministry and you use the curse, you're going to Azkaban. Okay.
Yeah. Although there was, you know, Sirius did make mention of when Crouch Sr. was in power, he gave certain aurors authorization to use them.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, on general principle, yeah. Like, it's not like, you know, these are typically like sanctioned and the government can use them. No.
The, okay. Okay. And especially not on like Hogwarts children. Students. Right.
And, you know, the ministry wouldn't want you to break the law, Professor Umbridge cried, Hermione. What Cornelius doesn't know won't hurt him. And we get this big reveal. He never, you know, people, you know, he never knew I ordered the Dementors after Potter last summer. Mic drop. What'd you think?
I didn't. My question was Harry's questions. You sent the Dementors and I'm like, how did she do it? That's what I couldn't. I still don't know that yet. That's not like I'm. All right.
So it was you. Somebody had to act, breathe Umbridge as her wand came to rest, pointing directly at Harry's forehead. They were all bleeding about silencing you somehow, discrediting you, but I was the one who actually did something about it. So in terms of how, like, as a ministry official with the Dementors in Azkaban, she had the authority.
Oh, okay.
She did have the authority. Obviously, it was on, like, the DL, and I highly doubt the Dementors, like, again, we still don't know if the Dementors have a language or how they communicate with
people. Yeah.
Like, okay. That's still a mystery. So clearly, the Dementors didn't care about telling, you know, because they just were like, oh, and you know, a free human to suck the soul out of. So,
yikes.
So yeah, so this is just interesting because, you know, because it's, you think for a long time that this is, you know, purely something that Voldemort or a Death Eater would do, and that the ministry just happened to like seize upon it because they, you know, because Harry's already on their shit list.
Right.
And so you just think that that's what that incident serves, you know, in the story. But, you know, you're realizing that, oh, it's not just Voldemort who is a problem. It's the quote unquote, you know, officially, you know, organized establishment.
Right. Right. Which makes sense.
So she's about to torture Harry.
Yeah.
And finally Hermione's like, no. And she's like, you know, which is interesting because Hermione's typically not the one to work under pressure.
No.
She's always the planner. That's why she plans so much, so that when disaster does strike, she has like very specific protocols in place for what to do. So this is a little bit out of her like sort of territory. But I think what makes it work is because, again, people want to hear what they want to hear.
Right.
And so she knows that even any mention of like Dumbledore being like this mastermind will immediately have Umbridge hook, line, and sinker.
Right. Yeah. It's a good lure to get old Umbridge.
Mm-hmm. And so Hermione, well, first, you know, everyone's like terrified that she's going to say, like, we were talking to Sirius, like the actual truth, but Hermione is just like, well, we were trying to speak to Professor Dumbledore. We wanted to tell him that it's ready. What is ready? The weapon.
This is when it's like, oh, good on you, Hermione. You're so smart. Because, like, she's just playing into what Umbridge, like you said, wants to hear. And it's working out for her.
And, you know, I forget what I think Amanda made mention of it in one of their episodes. You know, in terms of when it comes to lying, the best way to memorize a lie is it has to be rooted in some form of truth, whether it happened to someone else or some other detail. So what Hermione comes up with makes sense because, yes, she is specifically using the lure of Dumbledore, but she is saying, like, it's ready, the weapon, because all of the kids, all they've been thinking about all year, especially Harry, is what is the weapon that Voldemort wants so badly.
Right. Well, Smart.
So, and basically said it's, and she very plays into, like, you know, I'm not showing them. It is not for you to set conditions, said Professor. Fine, let them all see. I want to see all, like, the whole, like, how to use it. And then if you annoy any of them, they'll be able to sort you out. So basically, you know, she, you know, is able to portray this, like, you know, this weapon to the point that Umbridge is able to, you know, abandon her inquisitorial squad.
She buys into it enough that she's like, all right. Let's go see this weapon.
And so, all right. So, and you two can go ahead of me and show me the way. Lead on.
Yeah, and then I didn't get to read the rest, so.
Nope, you didn't. That
will... So, I'll find out later.
Yes. Very action-packed.
Yeah.
So much going on. If anything, like, when I reread these books, I actually, you know, kind of be like, when the climax happens, it's like, oh, I know what happens, blah, blah, blah. But this, I was really getting into it again this time.
Oh, good. Good. Mm-hmm. That's good.
So, are you ready for Gothic Geek Out?
Yes.
So, what was your...
I feel like there's definitely the end of the first chapter we read, chapter 31, the dreams, the vision, whatever we want to call it, is the best I could do in that. So, and I feel like I've expanded enough on that in past and you have too. So that's my Gothic geek out this week.
Okay. Mine has actually made me think, I thought more of, the attempt to ambush Hagrid.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, just the idea of, again, just the secrecy involved, like trying to underhandedly, you know, get the, you know, jump scare someone, and just, I don't know, just, I'm trying to think of like an other, like, comparison, but one's not immediately coming to mind. And I guess the certain level of, like, persecution involved with that ambush, because it's like, you know, a lot of times in Gothic literature and mystery novels, like, the person will be, like, constantly getting closer and closer to solving the murder, and other people will be, trying to throw obstacles, like legal, logistical, or otherwise, in their way before they can get to the truth. And it gets to a point where in some cases they even end up in jail or end up getting framed for something to try and prevent them from solving the mystery. So,
well, to that point, and to talk about, I think it's been a minute since I've talked about the Hunchback of Notre Dame, but ooh. I believe that's how, you know, Esmeralda, I think that's her name. God,
yeah,
it's been a while. She's arrested in it. I mean, she's almost tortured. So they're, I don't know, remember if Quasimodo was arrested or not, but there's a big theme of, you know, law and arresting and people not going quietly. I was trying to think through the ones that we read for Sublimely Gothic, and nothing came to mind very quickly.
But that's what I thought of.
Cool. Those are good.
Yay. And so then we move on to Tarot of the Day, which the card I pulled out was the Queen of Swords.
All right.
Yeah, Queen of Swords. Let's see, what does it have to say? The Queen of Swords combines the mental clarity and intellectual power of the suit of swords with the maturity and receptiveness of the queen. You have the gift of being able to use your intellect and unbiased judgment while also remaining flexible and open to receive input from other sources. As you lead from the head and not the heart, you are better able to discern situations without the influence of emotion or sentimentality. You may believe that empathy or compassion towards others will distract you from the task at hand. Instead, you prefer to know how, what, when, where, and who of everything to help you make sense of your environment and better understand others. It is not that you do not care about others, but you connect with people through an intellectual understanding rather than an emotional one. So I think implementing all of those sentiments is Hermione's response to Harry's, like, panic mode.
That's who I thought. I also thought of Snape too. I know. Yeah, yeah. Just because he was definitely more, you know, I don't know.
But yeah, yeah, like these very calm figures, like clearly when people, Harry and Umbridge, respectively, right, are basically having meltdowns and they're just like, you know.
They're the volatile ones and they have somebody in the kind of like, all right, let's just deal with this and move on. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. And then I guess in terms of like wanting to like know everything and like understand everything, you know, a little bit of Umbridge in that. But again, like Queen of Swords is very like stoic, not like completely unhinged.
Oh, okay.
All yeah. Right. Like yeah. That's not part of the queen, you know, at all. So I'm trying to think any others. The Queen of Swords notes that you are a truth seeker. You are open to hearing the thoughts and opinions of others, but ultimately you filter that information to decipher what is true and what is not. When interacting with others, you will not tolerate mistruths or excessive fluff. You prefer to get to the heart of the matter without engaging in too much chit-chat or gossip. So, yeah, I'm just trying to think of other capacities than the obvious ones.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm Hermione and Snape stand out. I'm sure I could go through the OWLs, but
well, the only thing I think of is that, you know, that Marchbanks, the tester, and mm-hmm. she was just like, oh, where's Dumbledore? And it's like, you know, we'll find him soon enough. And she's like, I doubt it. Not if he doesn't want to be found. Like she is again, does not have a horse in this race. So she just calls it out. Right. You know, if Dumbledore doesn't want to be found, you ain't going to find him.
It's probably very true because he's mm-hmm. the best.
Yeah, of course. Alrighty then. And any other thoughts for Queen of Swords?
No, I mean, Snape and Hermione, Queen of Swords of these chapters.
Indeed. So let me quickly grab my little booklet for the Oracle card.
Okay.
Alrighty. So we've got, you know, we've been going through, you know, there are a variety of types of cards in this deck. We've been going through a lot of like the direct zodiac signs lately, but this time I did not pick a zodiac sign, nor did I pick a planet or a house, but I picked one of the four elements.
Woo!
So the card I picked was the element of earth. Which right. Which is my element because I am a Taurus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, Earth is the element of the sign Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn. These are the signs that keep us centered, but more aptly fastened to the ground. Our spirits become stable, our souls deepen under the influence of Earth. The Earth elements reminds us that we are engaged in the five senses. Our dreams become manifest when in what is real, not what is imagined. So, interesting, the two Queen of Swords we discussed of being like the stable ones and calm yeah. ones. Hermione is a Virgo, an earth sign, and Snape is a Capricorn, an earth sign.
Well, that's pretty on the nose then. Wow. And I feel, I mean, again, that's so of course it's applicable to those two in their kind of demeanor in these two chapters as well.
Yeah. The earth element card is about finding meaning in the physical world, living free among nature, being animal and also human. The warning here is not to become stubborn, allow others to be who they are. It is not the time for rushing or criticism, which again Hermione could have handled Harry's meltdown a little better because she brings up good points, but she was doing it in a way that, you know,
yeah,
that, you know, was not the best. And it's just interesting because with dreams, like so much of like dreams and emotions and that sort of stuff, that's associated with the element of water, you know. So and so trying to make sense of these dreams, but obviously they're like more visions and, you know, how do those visions, you know, reconcile those with the physicality of reality with the earth. But
yeah.
The earth element card is about being practical and landing on your feet. You will want to look out for stubbornness at present, either in yourself or others. This can indicate being fixed in your views and not willing to try something new. It implies you may not feel it is time to change your ways or your course. However, action is needed. It's time to stop plotting and to let go of your fears. This card is about building blocks, building a home, or building a foundation for your life. In this way, you are finding a master plan and what works.
I was just trying to think about how, I mean, Hermione was pretty quick on her feet with the plan to divert Dolores' attention.
Mm-hmm. again, like just, yeah, like building blocks. Well, again, just the OWLs and them handling all these tests because they're like so fundamental to like their education and their careers.
Right. The big impact on their future.
Mm-hmm. All righty then. So yeah, that's all I've got for the earth sign. But yeah, I'm pretty good. Because again,
yeah,
because Hermione's double Virgo. She's sun and moon is Virgo.
Wow.
And actually, I think Snape's sun is Capricorn, but his moon is Taurus. So he's also, it's the different sign, but it's also earth.
I think this is just also proving your like witch abilities to pull those cards and these chapters. So.
All righty then. And then we move on to our last episode. Fan fiction time. I mean, our last exercise, not episode. Jesus Christ.
Tired. It's okay.
It's almost nine.
Yeah. It's okay. Well, I'll throw mine out there because what if Dolores had not interrupted? Do you think Harry would have continued to just like badger creature without somebody else at the house? Like, what would have happened?
Honestly, like I question the ability, like, you know, obviously you use our first exposure to flu powder is like as travel. Like, I'm under the impression that if Harry wanted to completely leave Hogwarts and go to and fully step into Grimmauld Place, he could do it if he wasn't interrupted. So I'm thinking that in creature saying that, you know, Harry might have barged in and just like tear up the house.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because and also even if not to tear up the house, like if they weren't interrupted, then Grimmauld Place would be a much better place to start from because the minute they know they want to get, if he's not there, they want to get to London. Grimmauld Place is in London. So going to Grimmauld Place would just completely, you know, get them in the same city where they need to be and just get to the ministry from there.
Right, right.
So.
Well, that was the best I could do this week with my, it was OWLs were pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So mine, what if Harry had gone to Snape? Again, not that I blame Harry, you know, in that, you know, crisis moment of not going because Snape does nothing to ingratiate himself. But what if Harry had gone to Snape?
I would like to think that Snape would have done something to help him or done something to get a message or find, you know, what something in a very Snape-like way, kind of like how he handled, you know, the situation with the Veritas serum and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he would have still been helpful. I don't think he would have been like, F you, Harry, get out of here.
I just think even if Harry had told him and even if Snape said, okay, I'll go do something, like Snape is not exactly the most open person. Like I don't see him telling Harry exactly what he's doing and being left in the dark to the point that Harry's just going to do what he's going to do anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Ugh.
And then I also thought of what if they had taken Hagrid?
Oh, geez. I mean, like, do they need you're like compounding the stress if they're doing that. So Hagrid, so I mean, I would just been bad. I mean, so I think that question was who would they have kind of driven their attention to? Would it still have been Sirius? Like, would they split up and kind of pursued?
No, you know? I mean, like, no, not so much. Not, I guess you're misinterpreting. I'm not saying what if Voldemort had taken Hagrid, but what if the ministry officials had been able to apprehend Hagrid?
Yeah, yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like, which problem would they have dealt with first? Because I feel like they would have wanted to deal with both issues. Would they have mm-hmm. said, you know, Hermione tackled this, Ron tackled that?
Because I think the implication would be that if Hagrid was apprehended, that he would be taken to Azkaban.
Oh shit!
So would they just be like, okay, we're breaking, you know, Sirius broke out of it, we can break into it.
Oh man, that wow.
Because the Ministry of Magic's in London, but the Azkaban Fortress is in the middle of the North Sea.
Yeah, and Azkaban's on like another level of scary. I don't think they're probably going to go, okay, let's see how far we can get to get him to prevent him from getting there. But those are two big, I don't know. My brain can't wrap around it right now. I feel like they would try to do something about both situations. Mm-hmm.
Because technically, like, Harry with his invisibility cloak, he has the ability he doesn't have his firebolt, so he can't fly anywhere, and he can't apparate yet. But, he could, like, there are secret passages, he could take his invisibility cloak and just leave the school.
Yeah, that probably would be.
Which, even if he couldn't directly help Hagrid, I think he might be mad enough if Hagrid was taken to just leave school, even without having a plan, just as like pure protest.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. Speaking of protest, at least at the time of this recording, right after Mother's Day, in light of the whole, Roe versus Wade possibly being overturned crisis, some feminists have called for a week-long strike of women not going into work, not buying anything and all those things. And I like the concept, but again, I think it's, again, especially with inflation and everything, not everyone has that, luxury.
Yeah, they've proposed that before, and it's kind of like you get in kind of to a privileged discussion too. I mean, some people just can't. So I think that, if you can buy as little as, mm-hmm. guess that's the way I've tried to participate, is just not, if I don't have to.
Well, so my friend Lacey, she went to a protest at the court, at the local courthouse, and, it was about 40 of them. And there was this one, pro-lifer who was just trying to, stir up shit.
Oh, gosh.
And she, they tried asking politely, it's like, hey, you have every right, to protest and, express your views. Can you please go to this corner of the courthouse so you can have your space and we can have our space. But the lady absolutely refused. She would just get in the middle of theirs. And it's a good thing that no one was everyone had cool heads, because 40 versus one, that lady could have been gotten smacked down if people didn't have self-restraint. But yeah, she was being so you can protest, but go on your side and we stay on our side. But she was just,
ugh, man. Well, I don't know of anything around here because I, like I've said, I've been solely focused on one thing. So,
mm-hmm. Boo. Alrighty then. Thus concludes this episode of, I was about to say Sublimely Gothic, but that is not true. I've just got Gothic on the brain because I've gotten back into my creepy Gothic poetry. But on the next episode of Rambling Raven Pups, it shall be chapters 33 and 34, Fight and Flight and the Department of Mysteries.
Finally.
So they do make it there.
Finally.
Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Pups. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.